This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Our Souls at Night by Kent Harroff, read for you by Mark Bramhall. Chapter 1. And then there was the day when Addie Moore made a call on Lewis Waters. It was an evening in May, just before full dark. They lived a block apart on Cedar Street in the oldest part of town, with elm trees and hackberry and a single maple grown up along the curb, and green lawns running back from the sidewalk to the two-story houses. It had been warm in the day, but it had turned off cool now in the evening. She went along the sidewalk under the trees and turned in at Lewis's house. When Lewis came to the door, she said, "Could I come in and talk to you about something?" They sat down in the living room. "Can I get you something to drink? Some tea?" "No, thank you. I might not be here long enough to drink it." She looked around. "Your house looks nice." "Diane always kept a nice house. I've tried a little bit." "It still looks nice," she said. "I haven't been in here for years." She looked out the windows at the side yard where the night was settling in, and out into the kitchen where there was a light shining over the sink and counters. It all looked clean and orderly. He was watching her. She was a good-looking woman. He had always thought so. She'd had dark hair when she was younger, but it was white now and cut short. She was still shapely, only a little heavy at the waist and hips. "You probably wonder what I'm doing here," she said. "Well, I didn't think you came over to tell me my house looks nice." "No. I want to suggest something to you."
"Oh?"
"Yes. A kind of proposal."
"Okay."
"Not marriage," she said. "I didn't think that either. But it's a kind of marriage-like question. But I don't know if I can now. I'm getting cold feet." She laughed a little. "That's sort of like marriage, isn't it?"
"What is?"
"Cold feet."
"It can be."
"Yes. Well, I'm just going to say it."
"I'm listening," Lewis said.
"I wonder if you would consider coming to my house sometimes to sleep with me."
"What? How do you mean?"
"I mean, we're both alone. We've been by ourselves for too long. For years. I'm lonely. I think you might be, too. I wonder if you would come and sleep in the night with me. And talk." He stared at her, watching her, curious now, cautious. "You don't say anything." "Have I taken your breath away?" she said.
"I guess you have."
"I'm not talking about sex."
I wondered.
"No, not sex. I'm not looking at it that way. I think I've lost any sexual impulse a long time ago. I'm talking about getting through the night and lying warm in bed, companionably, lying down in bed together and you staying the night. The nights are the worst, don't you think?"
"Yes, I think so.
I end up taking pills to go to sleep and reading too late, and then I feel groggy the next day. No use at all to myself or anybody else. I've had that myself. But I think I could sleep again if there were someone else in bed with me. Someone nice. The closeness of that. Talking in the night, in the dark." She waited. "What do you think?"
"I don't know."
"When would you want to start?"
"Whenever you want to."
"If," she said, "you want to. This week."
"Let me think about it."
"All right. But I want you to call me on the day you're coming, if that happens, so I'll know to expect you."
"All right."
"I'll be waiting to hear from you."
"What if I snore?"
"Then you'll snore, or you'll learn to quit."
He laughed. That would be a first.
She stood and went out and walked back home, and he stood at the door watching her, this medium-sized 70-year-old woman with white hair walking away under the trees in the patches of light thrown out by the corner street lamp.
"What in the hell?" he said. "Now don't get ahead of yourself."
Chapter 2 The next day, Lewis went to the barber on Main Street and had his hair cut short and neat, a kind of buzz cut, and asked the barber if he still shaved people, and the barber said he did, so he got a shave, too. Then he went home and called Addie and said, "I'd like to come over tonight, if that's still all right."
"Yes, it is," she said. "I'm glad."
He ate a light supper, just a sandwich and a glass of milk. He didn't want to feel heavy and laden in her bed. And then he took a long, hot shower and scrubbed himself thoroughly. He trimmed his fingernails and toenails, and at dark he went out the back door and walked up the back alley carrying a paper sack with his pajamas and toothbrush inside. It was dark in the alley, and his feet made a rasping noise in the gravel. A light was showing in the house across the alley, and he could see the woman in profile there at the sink in the kitchen. He went on into Addie Moore's backyard, past the garage and the garden, and knocked on the back door. He waited quite a while. A car drove by on the street out front, its headlights shining. He could hear the high school kids over on Main Street honking their horns at one another. Then the porch light came on above his head, and the door opened.
"What are you doing back here?" Addie said.
"I thought it would be less likely for people to see me."
"I don't care about that."
"They'll know. Someone will see. Come by the front door, out on the front sidewalk. I made up my mind I'm not going to pay attention to what people think. I've done that too long. All my life. I'm not going to live that way anymore. The alley makes it seem we're doing something wrong or something disgraceful to be ashamed of."
"I've been a school teacher in a little town too long," he said. "That's what it is. But all right, I'll come by the front door the next time, if there is a next time."
"Don't you think there will be?" she said.
"Is this just a one-night stand?"
"I don't know.
Maybe.
Minus the sex part of that, of course.
I don't know how this will go."
"Don't you have any faith?" she said.
"In you, I do. I can have faith in you. I see that already. But I'm not sure I can be equal to you."
"What are you talking about? How do you mean that?"
"Encourage," he said.
"Willingness to risk."
"Yes, but you're here."
"That's right.
I am."
"Then you better come in. We don't have to stand out here all night, even if it isn't something to be ashamed of." He followed her across the back porch into the kitchen.
"Let's have a drink first," she said.
"That sounds like a good idea. Do you drink wine?"
"A little."
"But you prefer beer?"
"Yes."
"I'll get beer for the next time, if there is a next time," she said. He didn't know if she was kidding or not.
"If there is," he said.
"Do you prefer white or red wine?"
"White, please."
She got a bottle out of the refrigerator and poured them each half a glass, and they sat down at the kitchen table.
"What's in the paper sack?" she said.
"Pajamas."
"That means you are ready to try this out for one time, at least."
"Yes, that's what it means."
They drank the wine.
"Do you want some more?"
"No, I don't think so."
"Could we look around the house?"
"You want me to show you the rooms and layout?"
"I'd just like to know more about where I am physically."
so you can sneak out if you need to, in the dark. Well, no, I wasn't thinking that.
She stood and he followed her into the dining room and the living room. Then she led him upstairs to the three bedrooms. The big room at the front of the house overlooking the street was hers.
"This is where we always slept," she said. "Jean had the bedroom at the back, and we used the other room as an office."
There was a bathroom down the hall, and another one off the dining room downstairs. The bed in the room was king-size, with a light cotton spread over it.
"What do you think?" she said.
"It's a bigger house than I thought.
More rooms.
It's been a good house for us. I've been here 44 years.
2 years after I moved back here with Diane.
A long time ago."
Chapter 3
"I think I'll just use the bathroom," she said. While she was out of the room, he looked at the pictures on her dresser and the ones hanging on the walls. Family pictures with Carl on their wedding day, on the church steps somewhere. The two of them in the mountains beside a creek. A little black-and-white dog. He knew Carl a little bit, a decent man, pretty calm. He sold crop insurance and other kinds of insurance to people all over Holt County 20 years ago, had been elected mayor of the town for 2 terms. Lewis never knew him well. He was glad now that he hadn't. There were pictures of their son. Jean didn't look like either of them. A tall, thin boy, very serious. And 2 pictures of their daughter as a young girl. When she came back, he said, "I think I'll use the bathroom, too." He went in and used the toilet and washed his hands scrupulously and squeezed out a little dollop of her toothpaste and brushed his teeth and then took off his shoes and clothes and got into his pajamas. He folded his clothes over his shoes and left them in the corner behind the door and went back to the bedroom. She had gotten into a nightgown and was in bed now, the bedside lamp alight on her side and the ceiling light switched off and the window open a few inches. There was a cool, soft breeze. He stood beside the bed. She folded back the sheet and blanket.
"Aren't you getting in?"
"I'm considering it."
He got into bed, staying on his side, and pulled the blanket up and lay back. He didn't say anything yet.
"What are you thinking?" she said. "You're awfully quiet."
"How strange this is. How new it is to be here. How uncertain I feel. I'm sort of nervous. I don't know what I'm thinking. A mess of things."
"It is new, isn't it?" she said.
"It's a good kind of new, I'd say. Would you?"
"I would."
"What do you do before you sleep?"
"Oh, I watch the 10 o'clock news and come to bed and read till I'm asleep. But I don't know if I'll be able to sleep tonight. I'm too keyed up."
"I'm going to shut off the light," she said. "We can still talk."
She turned in the bed, and he looked at her bare, smooth shoulders and her bright hair under the light. Then it was dark, with just the light from the street showing faintly in the room. They talked about trivial matters, getting acquainted a little, the minor routine events of town, the health of the old lady Ruth, who lived in between their houses, the paving of Birch Street. Then they were quiet. After a while, he said,
"Are you still awake?"
"Yes."
"You asked what I was thinking. One thing I was thinking, I'm glad I didn't know Carl very well."
"Why?"
"I wouldn't feel as good as I do being here if I did. But I knew Diane pretty well."
An hour later, she was asleep and breathing quietly. He was still awake.
He had been watching her. He could see her face in the dim light. They hadn't touched once. At 3 in the morning, he got up and went to the bathroom and came back and shut the window. A wind had come up. At daybreak, he rose and got dressed in the bathroom and looked again at Addie Moore in bed. She was awake now. "I'll see you," he said. "Will you?" "Yes." He went out and walked home on the sidewalk, past the neighboring houses, and went inside and made coffee and ate some toast and eggs, and went out and worked in his garden for a couple of hours, and returned to the kitchen, and ate an early lunch, and slept heavily for 2 hours in the afternoon. Chapter 4 When he woke that afternoon, he realized he was sick. He got up and drank some water and felt hot. He thought for a while and then decided to call her. On the phone, he said, "I just got up from a nap and I don't feel good. A pain in my stomach of some kind and also in my back. I'm sorry, I won't be coming over tonight." "I see," she said, and hung up. He called his doctor's office and made an appointment for the next morning. He went to bed early and was sweaty in the night and couldn't sleep, and in the morning he didn't feel like eating, and at 10 he went to see the doctor and was sent to the hospital for blood and urine tests. He waited there in the lobby until the lab had the results, and then they admitted him with a urinary tract infection. They gave him antibiotics, and he slept most of the afternoon and again was awake much of the night. In the morning he felt better, and they told him he'd probably be released the next day. He ate breakfast and lunch and took a short nap, and when he woke up around 3, she was sitting in the chair beside his bed. He looked at her. "You weren't kidding," she said. "Did you think I was? I thought you were just saying you were sick, that you decided you didn't want to be with me at night." "I was afraid you were thinking that." "I thought it wasn't going to happen," she said. "I've been thinking of you all yesterday and last night and all day today," he said. "What were you thinking?" "How you'd misinterpret my call, and how I could explain that I still want to come at night and be together. How I was feeling more interested in this than I'd felt about anything for a long time." "Why didn't you call me then, to tell me?" "I thought it might even be worse, that it would sound all the more like I was making this up." "I wish you'd tried." "I should have." "How did you find out I was in the hospital?" "I was talking to Ruth next door this morning, and she said, 'Did you hear about Lewis?' I said, 'What about him?' 'He's in the hospital.' 'What's wrong with him?' 'They say he's got some kind of infection.' 'Then I knew,' she said." "I'm not going to lie to you," he said. "All right. Neither of us will." "So will you come again?" "As soon as I feel well and am sure I'm over this." "It's good to see you," he said. "Thank you. You look pretty ragged right now." "I haven't had time to put on my face yet." She laughed. "I don't care," she said. "That's not what I mean. I was just making a comment, an observation." "Well, you look pretty good to me," he said. "Did you call your daughter?" "I told her not to worry, that I'd be out in a day and this was nothing to be concerned about. She won't have to take off work. I don't need her to come see me now. She lives in Colorado Springs." "I know." "She's a teacher, like I was." Then he stopped talking. "Do you want something to drink? I could call the nurse." "No, I'm going home now." "I'll call you after I'm home again and feeling all right." "Good," she said. "I already bought some beer." She left, and he watched her walk out of the room, and he lay in the bed waiting to go back to sleep. But they brought his supper, and he looked at the news while he ate and afterward shut off the TV and looked out the window and watched it turn dark outside, out over the wide plain west of town. Chapter 5. The next afternoon he was released from the hospital. But he must have been sicker than they thought, and it took him almost a full week to feel himself again, to feel well enough to call and ask her if it was all right to come over that night.
"Were you still sick?"
"Yes. I don't know what took me so long to get over it." He showered and shaved and put on aftershave, and at dark took the paper sack with his pajamas and toothbrush and went out front past the neighbors' houses and knocked at the door.
Addie came right away.
"Well, you're looking better. Come in."
Her hair was brushed back from her face, and she looked pretty.
They sat, as before, at the kitchen table and drank and talked a little. Then she said,
"I'm ready to go up. Are you?"
"Yes."
She set their glasses in the sink, and he followed her upstairs. He went to the bathroom and got into his pajamas and folded his clothes in the corner. She was in bed in her nightgown when he entered the bedroom. She drew back the covers and he lay down.
"You didn't leave your pajamas here last time. That was another reason I didn't think you were coming back. I thought it would look presumptuous, like I was taking this for granted. We hadn't really even said much yet."
"Well, you can leave your pajamas and toothbrush here from now on," she said.
"It'll save wear and tear on paper sacks," he said.
"Yes,
exactly."
"Do you have something in mind you want to talk about?" she said. "Not anything urgent, just to start talking."
"I'm full of questions, mostly."
"I have some, too," she said. "But what are yours?"
"I wondered why you picked me. We don't really know each other very well."
"Did you think I would just pick anyone? That I just want anybody to keep me warm at night? Just any old person to talk to?"
"I didn't think that. But I don't know why you picked me."
"Are you sorry I did?"
"No, it's not that at all. I'm just curious. I wondered."
"Because I think you're a good man. A kind man."
"I hope I am."
"I think you are. And I've always sort of thought of you as someone I might be able to like and to talk to. How have you thought of me, if you ever have?"
"I've thought of you," he said.
"In what way?"
"As a good-looking woman. Someone with substance. Character."
"Why would you say that?"
"Because of how you live. How you managed your life after Carl died. That was a hard time for you," he said. "That's what I mean. I know what it was like for me after my wife died, and I could see that you were doing better than I did. I admired that."
"You never came over or made a point of saying anything," she said.
"I didn't want to seem intrusive."
"You wouldn't have.
I was very lonely."
"I assumed that. But still didn't do anything."
"What else do you want to know?"
"Where you came from? Where you grew up? What you were like as a girl? What your parents were like? If you have brothers or sisters? How you met Carl? What's your relationship with your son? Why you moved to Holt? Who your friends are? What you believe, what party you vote for."
"We're going to have a lot of fun talking, aren't we?" she said. "I want to know all that about you, too."
"We don't have to rush it," he said.
"No.
Let's take our time."
She turned in bed and shut off the lamp, and again he looked at her bright hair in the light and her bare shoulders. And then in the dark she took his hand and said good night. And soon she was asleep. It was surprising to him how quickly she could fall asleep.
Chapter 6
The next day he worked in the yard in the morning and mowed the lawn and ate lunch and took a short nap, and then went down to the bakery and drank coffee with a group of men he met with every other week. One of them, a man he didn't particularly like. The man said,
"I wish I had your energy."
"How's that?"
"To stay out all night and then still have enough left over to function the day after."
Lewis looked at him for a while.
"You know," he said, "one of the things I always hear is how any story is safe with you. It goes right in your ears and out your mouth. I wouldn't want to get the name of a liar and a prevaricator in a little town the size of this one. A reputation like that would just about follow you everywhere."
The man stared at Lewis. He looked around at the other men sitting at the table. They were looking anywhere but at him. He stood and walked out of the bakery onto Main Street.
"I don't believe he paid for his coffee," one of the men said.
"I'll take care of it," Lewis said. "I'll see you boys later." He went up to the counter and paid for the other's coffee and his own, and walked outside and over to Cedar Street. At home, he went out to the garden and hoed for an hour, hard, almost violently, and then went inside and fried a hamburger and drank a glass of milk, and afterward showered and shaved. At dark, he went back to Addie's.
Chapter 7
During the day, she had cleaned her house thoroughly, and had clean sheets on the bed upstairs, and had bathed and eaten a sandwich for supper. As the day faded, she sat in the living room, quiet, motionless, thinking, waiting till Lewis should come to the door and knock as it turned dark. Finally he came, and she let him in. She could see something was different. "What's wrong?" she said.
"I'll tell you in a minute. Can we have a drink first?"
"Of course." They went to the kitchen, and she gave him a bottle of beer and poured wine for herself. She looked at him, waiting.
"We're no secret anymore," he said, "if we ever were."
"How do you know? What happened?"
"You know Dorlan Becker.
He used to own the men's store."
"Yes."
"He sold it and stayed in town. Everybody thought he'd move somewhere else. He never seemed to like it here. He goes down to Arizona for the winters."
"What's that have to do with our secret being out?"
"He's one of the people I meet with at the bakery a couple of times a month. Today he wanted to know how I had so much energy, being out all night and then to do what I normally do in the daytime."
"What did you say?"
"I told him he was getting the reputation of a gossip and a liar. I got mad. I didn't handle it right. I'm still mad about it."
"I can tell.
I should have just ignored it and defused it, but I didn't. I didn't want them thinking anything bad about you."
"Let it go, Lewis. We knew from the start that people would find out. We talked about it."
"Yes, but I wasn't thinking. I wasn't ready. I didn't want them making up a story about us, about you."
"I appreciate that, but they can't hurt me. I'm going to enjoy our nights together, for as long as they last."
He looked at her.
"Why do you say it that way?
You sound like I did the other day. Don't you think they'll last? For a good while?"
"I hope so," she said.
"I told you I don't want to live like that anymore. For other people, what they think, what they believe. I don't think it's the way to live. It isn't for me, anyway."
"All right. I wish I had your good sense."
"You're right, of course."
"Are you over it now?"
"I'm getting there."
"You want another beer?"
"No. But if you want more wine, I'll sit here with you while you drink it. I'll just watch you."
Chapter 8
I was raised in Lincoln, Nebraska, she said. We lived out on the northeast side of town. We had a nice two-story clapboard house. My father was a businessman and did well, and my mother was a very good housekeeper and a good cook. It was a middle-class sort of neighborhood, a working-class neighborhood. I had one sister. We didn't get along. She was more active and more outgoing, with a kind of gregarious nature that I didn't have. I was quiet, bookish. After high school, I went to the university and lived at home and took the bus downtown to my classes. I started off studying French, but switched to elementary school education. Then I met Carl in my sophomore year, and we started dating, and by the time I turned 20, I was pregnant.
Were you scared?
Not of the baby, no. Not of having one. But I didn't know how we would manage. Carl still had a year and a half to get his degree. On Christmas Day, he joined me at my parents' house. He lived in Omaha. And together, we both told my parents, after dinner, all of us sitting in the living room. My mother just started crying. My father was angry. I thought you knew better. He stared at Carl. What in hell's wrong with you? Nothing's wrong with him, I said. It just happened. Well, it didn't, by God, just happen. He made it happen. There were two of us involved, Daddy. Well, my God, he said. We got married in January and moved into a tiny, dark apartment in downtown Lincoln, and I got a temporary job clerking in a department store, and we waited. The baby came one night in May. They wouldn't let Carl in the room. Then we took the baby home and were happy and very poor.
Didn't your parents help you?
Not much. Carl didn't want their help.
Well, I didn't either.
That was your daughter then?
I didn't think she was that old.
Yes, that was Connie. I only remember her vaguely. I know how she died.
Yes.
Addie stopped talking and moved in the bed.
I'll talk about that some other time.
I'll just tell you now that when Carl graduated, we both wanted to come to Colorado. We'd gone to Estes Park once for a short vacation and liked the mountains and needed to get out of Lincoln and away from everything and start up somewhere new. Carl got a job selling insurance in Longmont, and we lived there for a couple of years. Then old Mr. Gorland here in Holt decided to retire, and so we borrowed money and moved here, and Carl took over his insurance office and his clients. And we've been here ever since. That was in 1970.
How was it that you got pregnant?
What do you mean? How does anybody get pregnant? Well, my memory is we were all pretty careful and nervous back then. But we were young, too. Carl and I were in love. It's the old story. It was all new and exciting.
It must have been.
She let go of his hand and moved farther away and lay straight in bed. He turned and looked at her in the dim light.
Why are you acting like this? She said. What's the matter?
I don't know.
Are you asking about the circumstances?
I guess.
About the sex?
I'm being more stupid than usual. I just feel sort of jealous, and I don't know what.
Out in the country on a dirt road in the back seat in the dark. Is that what you want to know?
I'd appreciate it if you would just call me a goddamn son of a bitch, Lewis said. A man too foolish for words.
All right.
You're a foolish son of a bitch.
Thank you, he said.
You're welcome.
But you could ruin this.
You know that.
Is there anything else?
Did your parents ever get over it?
It turned out they actually liked Carl. My mother always thought of him as a dark-haired, good-looking man. And my father could see that Carl was a hard worker and that he would take care of us. And of course he did. We had some hard times. But mostly, as far as being financially comfortable after the first 7 or 8 years, we were fine. Carl was a good provider. And sometime in there you had a little boy to go with the girl. Jean. Connie was 6 then. Chapter 9. Addie drove her car into the alley behind her neighbor Ruth's house, got out and went up to the back door. The old lady was waiting, sitting in a chair on the porch. She was 82 years old. She stood up when Addie arrived, and the two women came slowly down the steps, Ruth holding on to Addie's arm, and came out to the car, and Addie helped her in and waited for her to arrange her thin legs and feet, and then she fastened the seat belt and shut the door. They drove to the grocery store on the highway at the southeast side of town. There were only a few cars in the parking lot, a slow summer's mid-morning. They went in, and Ruth held onto the shopping cart, and they moved slowly through the aisles, looking, taking their time. She didn't want or need much, just cans or cartons of food and a loaf of bread and a bag of little Hershey bars in foil. "Aren't you going to get anything?" she said. "No," Addie said. "I shopped the other day. I'll just get some milk." "I shouldn't eat this chocolate, but what difference does it make now? I'm going to eat whatever I want to." She put canned soup and stew in her cart and boxes of frozen dinners and a couple of boxes of dry cereal and a quart of milk and some strawberry preserves. "Is that everything?" "I believe so." "Don't you want some fruit?" "I don't want fresh fruit. It'll just spoil." They went around to the canned fruit, and she took down 2 cans of peaches in their sweet syrup and some canned pears, then a box of oatmeal cookies with raisins. At the cash register, the clerk looked at the old lady and said, "Did you find everything, Mrs. Joyce? Everything you wanted?" "I didn't find me a good man. I didn't see one of them on the shelf." "No, I couldn't find any good man back there." "Couldn't you? Well, sometimes they're closer to home than you think." She glanced quickly at Addie, standing next to the old lady. "How much is it?" Ruth said. The clerk told her. "Your blouse has a spot on it," Ruth said. "It's not clean. You shouldn't come to work dressed like that." The clerk looked down. "I don't see anything." "It's there." She took her money from her old soft leather purse and slowly counted out the money in her hand and laid the bills and coins on the counter in neat order. Then they went out to the car, and Addie put the groceries in the back seat and got in. Ruth was looking straight ahead at the highway, where the cars and cattle trucks and grain trucks were going by. "Sometimes I hate this place," she said. "Sometimes I wish I had gotten out of here when I could. These small-town, small-minded pissants," she said. "You're talking about that clerk?" "Her, yes. And everybody like her." "Do you know her?" "She's one of the Coxes. Her mother was just the same, thought she knew everybody's business, had a mouth like this one. She makes me want to give her a good slap." "So you know about Lewis and me," Addie said. "I get up early every morning. I can't sleep. And I sit out in the front room watching the sun come up over the houses across the street. I see Lewis in the morning going home." "I knew somebody would see him. It doesn't matter." "I hope you're having a good time." "He's a good man, don't you think?" "I think so. But the returns aren't all in yet either. He's always been kind to me, though," she said. "He mows my lawn and shovels the snow on my walks in the winter. He started that before Diane died. But he's no saint. He's caused his share of pain. I could tell you about that. His wife could have told you." "I don't think that'll be necessary," Addie said. "That was a long time ago anyway," Ruth said. years ago. I think his wife mostly got over it. People do.
Chapter 10
Addie said, "Tell me about the other woman."
"Who do you mean?"
"The one you had an affair with."
"You know about that?"
"Everybody does."
"She was married," Lewis said. "Tamara, that was her name. It still is if she's still alive. Her husband was a nurse, working nights at the hospital here in town. It was unusual for a man to be a nurse back then. People didn't know what to make of it. They had a little girl, about 4 years old, a year older than Holly. Little tough, thin, blonde girl. Her father, Tamara's husband, was a big, sort of heavy-set, blonde guy. He was a good guy, really. He wanted to write stories. I guess he wrote some at night at the hospital. They'd had some trouble before, and she'd had an affair with somebody back in Ohio. She was a teacher in the high school like I was. I'd been there only 2 years when she got hired.
What did she teach?
She was one of the English teachers, too. The freshman and sophomore classes, basic stuff.
You taught the upper-level courses.
Yes, I'd been there longer.
Well, so she was unhappy at home, and Diane and I weren't doing so well either.
Why not?
Because of me, mostly. But both of us, too. We couldn't talk. We'd get in a fight or an argument, and she'd start crying and leave the room and wouldn't finish what we were talking or fighting about. That made it worse.
Then at school, one of you made some kind of a move, some gesture, Addie said.
Yes, she put her hand on my arm when we were alone in the teacher's break room.
"Are you going to say something to me?" she said.
"Like what?" I said.
"Like, do you want to go out for a drink or something?"
"I don't know," I said. "Do you want me to? What do you think?"
That was in April, middle of April. I was doing our taxes for the year, and on the 15th, after supper, I took the tax returns to the post office to get them mailed on time, and I drove by her house, and I could see her sitting at the dining room table grading papers. And so I parked down the street and came up on her porch and knocked, and she came to the door. She was already in her bathrobe. "Are you alone?" I said. "Pamela's here, but she's in bed already. Why don't you come in?"
So I went in.
"That's how it started?"
"Yes, on tax day."
"Sounds crazy, doesn't it?"
"I don't know. These things happen in all kinds of ways."
"You know something about this?"
"I know something about how these things happen in people's lives."
"Will you tell me?"
"Maybe, someday."
"So, what did you do?"
"I left Diane and Holly and moved in with her. Her husband moved out, stayed with a friend. And, well, we got along for a couple of weeks. She was a beautiful, hard, wild woman with long brown hair and brown eyes that were kind of like an animal's eyes in bed. And she had lovely skin, like satin. Her body was pretty thin."
"You're still in love with her?"
"No. But I think I'm in love a little with the memory of her. Of course, it got bad in the end. One night her husband came over when we were eating supper in the kitchen. Tamara and her little girl and me. We sat there at the table talking with her husband like we were all advanced and sophisticated and that we were people who would just break up marriages and go on like free people. But I couldn't go on. I was sick of myself. Her husband there at the table, and she and the little girl. I got up and left the house and drove out in the country. The stars were all shining, and there were the farm lights and yard lights all looking blue in the dark, everything looking normal, except nothing was normal anymore. Everything was at some kind of cliff's edge, and late that night I came back. She was in bed, reading. "I can't do this," I said. "Are you leaving?" "I have to. This is going to hurt too many people. It has already. And here I am trying to be a father to your daughter while my own is growing up without me. I have to go back because of her, if for no other reason."
"When are you leaving?"
"This weekend."
"Then come to bed now," she said. "We have two more nights."
I remember those nights. How it was.
"Don't tell me about them. I don't want to know."
"No, I won't tell about them.
When I was leaving,
I just cried. She did too."
"Then what?"
"I went back to Diane and Holly and moved back in the house and lived downstairs and slept on the couch. Diane was pretty quiet about it. She was never vindictive or nasty or mean about any of it. She could see I felt like hell. And I don't think she wanted to lose me or lose the life we had. Then in the summer, one of my old college friends came out from Chicago and wanted to go fishing, and I drove him up to the White Forest above Glenwood Springs, but he didn't like it. He wasn't used to the mountains. When I took him down a steep trail to a creek, he was afraid we were lost. We caught some nice fish, too, but it didn't matter. We drove back to Holt, and Diane met me at the door. Holly was sleeping, taking her afternoon nap. And we went to bed immediately. It just caught us that way. Maybe the best time of any. That kind of unthinking urgency. While my friend was waiting for us downstairs to eat supper. And that was it."
"You never saw her again?"
"I didn't. But she came back to Holt. She'd moved to Texas at the end of the school year and taken a job down there. Then she came back to Holt and called me. Diane took the call. She said, 'Someone wants to talk to you. Who is it?' She didn't say anything, just handed me the phone. It was her. Tamara. 'I'm here in town. Will you see me?' 'I can't. No, I can't do that.'
'You won't see me again?'
'I can't.'"
Diane was out in the kitchen listening.
But it wasn't that. I'd made up my mind. I had to stay with her and our daughter.
"And then what?"
"Tamara went back down to Texas and started teaching where she had accepted the job. And Diane let me stay."
"Where is she now?"
"I don't know where she is."
"She and her husband never got back together, so there was that, too. I don't like to think about my part in that. She was from back east, Massachusetts. Maybe she's back there."
"You've never talked to her?"
"No."
"I still think you're in love with her."
"I'm not in love with her."
"It sounds like you are."
"I didn't treat her right."
"No, you didn't." "I regret that."
"What about Diane?"
"She never said much afterward. She was hurt and angry when it was starting. More then than later. More crying, I mean. I'm sure she felt rejected and mistreated. She had good reason to feel that way. And that was picked up by her little girl from her mother and probably is a part of her feeling now about men, including me. She has the feeling she has to be a certain way or she'll be abandoned. But I think I regret hurting Tamara more than I do hurting my wife. I failed my spirit or something. I missed some kind of call to be something more than a mediocre high school English teacher in a little dirt-blown town.
I've always heard you were a good teacher.
People in town think so. You were a good teacher for Jean."
A good one, maybe. But not a great one. I know that.
Chapter 11.
You said you remember it, Addie said.
Some of it.
This was in the summer, wasn't it? August 17th. A clear, blue, hot summer day. They were playing out in the front yard. Connie had the hose running with an old-fashioned sprinkler head screwed onto the end, the kind that sprays up a cone of water so they could run through it, she and Jean. He was 5 years old then. She was 11, still just young enough to play with him. They had their swimming suits on and ran back and forth through the sprinkler and jumped over it, screaming, and she grabbed his hand and pulled him through it on his seat and held him over the water. I watched all that. Then he unscrewed the head and was chasing her around in the yard, spraying her. They were yelling and laughing, and I went back to the kitchen to check on dinner. I was cooking some soup. Then I heard a squeal of car tires and a terrible scream. I ran out to the front door. A man was standing out of his car, and Jean was crying, wailing, looking at the street in front of the man's car. I ran out. Connie was flung out in the street in her swimming suit, bleeding from her ears and mouth and the gash on her forehead, her legs wrenched up under her, her arms spread out at weird angles. Jean kept screaming and crying, the worst kind of desperate sound I'd ever heard. The man who was driving the car, he's moved away now, kept saying, "Oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God."
"You don't have to say any more," Lewis said. "You don't have to tell me. I remember now."
"No, I'm going to say this. Somebody called the ambulance. I never did know who it was. They came and put her on a stretcher, and I climbed in with them. Jean was still crying. I told him to get in with me. They didn't want that, but I said, 'God damn it, he's coming. Now go.'" She had a terrible gash on her head, already swollen and dark, and blood kept running from her ears and mouth. They gave me towels to wipe at her. I held her bloody head in my lap, and we drove. The terrible siren, whining, and at the hospital they took her into the back entrance from the parking lot. And the nurse said, "In there that way, but I don't think it's a good place for this little boy. I'll get somebody to take him to the waiting room." He started screaming again. The receptionist took him away, and we went into the emergency room. They laid her down on the bed, and the doctor came. She was still alive then, but she was unconscious. Her eyes were closed, and she was having trouble breathing. One of her arms was broken, and she had broken ribs. They didn't know what else yet. I told them to call Carl at his office. I stayed with her. After a while, Carl went home with Jean to take care of him, and I stayed the night with her. About 4 in the morning, she woke up for a few minutes and stared at me. I was crying, and she just stared. She didn't speak. Then she took a couple of breaths, and that was all. She was just gone. I cradled her in my arms and rocked her and cried and cried. The nurse came in. I told her to tell Carl. The rest of that day is a confusion of things. We arranged for her burial, and in the evening we went to the funeral home. After she was embalmed, we let Jean come in and see her. He didn't touch her. He was too afraid. I don't know why he wouldn't be. Yes, they put heavy makeup on her face to cover up the bad bruises, and they'd closed the gash on her forehead, and she was wearing one of her blue dresses. 2 days later, she was buried. I mean, her body was buried. out at the cemetery. I sometimes feel I can still talk to her. Her spirit, or her soul, if you want to say that. But she seems okay now. She once said to me, "I'm all right. Don't worry." I want to believe that.
"Of course," Lewis said.
Carl wanted us to move to a different house in town, but I said I wouldn't. I didn't want to leave this place. It was right out in front of this house. "This is where she died," I said. "This is sacred to me." So we didn't move. Maybe we should have, for Gene's sake.
He never got over it.
None of us has. But he was the one who caused her to run out in the street ahead of the car. He was just a little boy chasing his sister with a water hose. Afterward, your wife came over a number of times to check on me. That was kind of her. I appreciated it. I was grateful to her. Most people felt too uncomfortable to say anything at all.
I should have come with her.
That would have been good.
"Sins of omission," Lewis said.
"You don't believe in sins."
"I believe there are failures of character, like I said before. That's a sin."
"Well, you're here now.
This is where I want to be now."
Chapter 12.
"I won't be coming over here for a few days," Lewis said.
"Why won't you?"
"Holly's coming out for Memorial Day weekend. I think she wants to kick my butt."
"What do you mean?"
"I think she's got wind of you and me. I think she wants me to behave."
"What do you think about that?"
"Of behaving? I am behaving. I'm doing what I want, and it isn't hurting anyone. And I hope it's good for you, too."
"It is."
"I'll have to hear her out, but it won't change anything. I won't do any more what she wants me to than she does what I want her to do about the guys she goes out with. She keeps finding these guys who need propping up. They lean on her. She takes care of them for a year or so, and then she gets tired of it or something blows up, and she's alone for a while. Then she finds another one to take care of. She's between guys right now."
"Will you call me when you can come back?"
Chapter 13. The next day, Holly drove out to Holt from Colorado Springs, and Lewis met her at the door and kissed her. They had supper sitting at the picnic bench in the backyard, and afterward they washed the dishes together and sat in the living room drinking wine. "I'm thinking of going to Italy for a couple of weeks this summer," she said, "to Florence for a class in printmaking."
"I think you should. That sounds good."
"I made the flight arrangements already. They've accepted me in a printing workshop."
"Good for you.
Do you need help paying for it?"
"No, Daddy, I'm all right."
She looked at him for a moment.
"But I'm worried about you."
"Oh, is that so?"
"Yes."
"What are you doing with Addie Moore?"
"I'm having a good time."
"What would Mom say?"
"I don't know. But I think your mom might understand.
She was a lot more capable of forgiveness and understanding than people knew. She was wise in many ways. She saw things in a bigger way than people do."
"But, Daddy, it's not right. I didn't know you even cared for Addie Moore, or even knew her that well."
"You're right, I didn't. But that's the main point of this being a good time, getting to know somebody well at this age, and finding out you like her, and discovering you're not just all dried up after all."
"It just seems embarrassing."
"To whom?"
"It's not to me."
"But people know about you."
"Of course they do, and I don't give a damn."
"Who told you?"
"It must have been one of your tight-ass friends in town here."
"It was Linda Rogers."
"She would."
"Well, she thought I should know, And now you do. And you want